Welcome to Dev Jams. This is where we talk with developers who are doing inspiring, innovative, interesting projects when it comes to images and videos that happen to be in most development projects. And they probably are likely using Clatonary for all of that innovative work that they are doing. My name is Sam Brace. I am the Senior Director of Customer Education and Community for overall Clatonary. And I'm very happy that you are here today for this Dev Jams episode. This is going to be a fabulous one. If you are interested in images, but also making them as lightweight as possible, and we're going to be talking a lot today about bandwidth and how to properly reduce that using functionality available with Clatonary's APIs, SDKs, and our overall transformations. Joining me for this episode is Jen Brisman. She is a technical curriculum engineer here at Clatonary on our customer education team, and I am very happy to have here for this program. So Jen, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me.
So Jen and I, we're going to be talking to Grant Sander, who is the Vice President of Engineering at Formidable, which is a firm that's focusing on design and development for some fairly large customers. That includes probably a lot of the brands that you're very familiar with, maybe you're purchasing from every single day. The overall development and design work that's happening from them, a lot of those aspects are being handled by Formidable. And he's going to be talking to me about their own website, formidable.com. And they're going to be diving into some of the ways that they were able to reduce the bandwidth and then, of course, associate that for some of the work that they're doing for their clients. But Jen, why is that exciting to you? What's getting you fired up about this episode?
Well, I'm excited to have Grant here. We're so lucky to have him because he's working with Formidable, one of our partners at Clatonary. We don't always get the chance to talk to people who we work with as well, and they use us, we use them. So it's kind of cool to see how everything works together, and we're going to get into that with Grant today.
I agree. And what's also wonderful about this is that I think what we're going to also talk about is a very natural evolution that we've seen companies take when it comes to maturity of working with images and videos and digital media, essentially, where sometimes you might start off, you're saying an S3 bucket where we're going to store everything in terms of a place for it to go. It's a nice cloud-based centralized area. That's enough for what it is. But as time goes on, you need to start thinking about what formats are we delivering those things at? Is that really the right level of compression that we want everything to be at? Is serving everything as originals actually hurting our overall performance rather than providing some type of variation or derivative of that file so that way it loads as quickly as possible? So what I love about what Grant's going to talk with us here today about is something that probably a lot of developers have felt when they've gone through working with images and videos on the web.
Absolutely.
So Jen, one thing that, of course, that we want to point out to everybody is the fact that we are in lots of places. So if you are saying, okay, great, I love the concept of being on this live stream, I love that Clatonary is talking with developers, well, note that you can always go to clatonary.com/podcasts for all the previous episodes, because we've been doing this for about 2 years now, talking with developers like Grant and others that are really pushing the boundaries of what images and videos are in the web. And of course, mobile as well. So you can always go to clatonary.com/podcasts for all of that. And we, of course, want to emphasize our Clatonary community. So if you hear some great conversations that are happening here and you want to keep those going, you can always pop over to Clatonary. So community, so that's going to be community.clatonary.com. And that's going to be at the main space where you can see all of the content that happens to be there. So let's go ahead and bring Grant on and have a little bit of detail about what he's been doing at Formidable and being able to optimize that content. So, Grant, welcome to the episode.
Hello.
So, Grant, obviously, I've been very impressed with all the work that you're doing, all the work that Formidable's doing, but maybe people that are listening to this is their first time encountering you. So, tell us a little bit about you, a little bit about Formidable.
Yeah, so maybe we start with Formidable. Formidable's a digital design and development agency. We do dev work, design work, product work for companies of varying sizes, anywhere from like smaller startups all the way up to, you know, Fortune 100 companies. So we've got, you know, a wide portfolio, and we do a lot. We focus a lot on like modern JavaScript tooling. So we were pretty early in the React space. We do a lot of work with modern React, do a lot with Next.js. React Native is another big one. We do a lot of like cross platform mobile work on the engineering side of things, as well as all the fun design system product type stuff. So that's kind of like at a high level what Formidable does. We help companies build cool things and help level up their engineers to build cool things. So that's Formidable. I am just another engineer, I suppose. Recently, I am now VP of engineering at Formidable, which is sort of a scary title. But yeah, I basically help client teams succeed, help with like client facing work, but also involved in partnership things. And so, like you mentioned, you know, Formidable and Cloudinary are partners. We're an agency partner of Cloudinary. So do a lot of like partnership engagement and also sort of help lead the open source initiatives at Formidable. So Formidable does a lot of open source software work. And so I help with that, build tooling around. A lot of times it's tooling around like what helps our client team succeed, which is kind of nice because if it's helping our client team succeed, it's often helping other teams succeed. So kind of involved in a handful of different things at Formidable.
Which is fantastic because it's where you have a lot of concepts and what's working for your clients that you're working with, what's working well for the various partners, as you mentioned, working with Cloudinary and others. And then even on top of that, being able to understand the brand presence. So you have a lot of hands and lots of pots, but that's a great place for us to be at with a guest like you. So this is fantastic that you're involved with all those different efforts. One thing I wanted to ask you about, because you mentioned some of the programming languages that you guys are working with at Formidable, and you mentioned React, you mentioned React Native. Talk to me a little bit about that. Why are some of these choices being made? Are you guys necessarily calling yourselves a JavaScript shop? Or is it where you're focusing on certain frameworks because of certain reasons? What's the intention behind that?
Yeah. And, you know, in consulting, it kind of depends on what business you can get, although it's sort of a chicken and egg problem where you've got to have engineers to staff things. And so we've been, you know, pretty early in the JavaScript. That was sort of where when Formidable was a small agency, that was the type of work that we were doing. And we've just kind of grown to be somewhat well known in the JavaScript community. So that's been our strength for many years has been JavaScript. And, you know, this predates my time at Formidable by a number of years, but Formidable is also early to React. I think, you know, early engineers at Formidable kind of saw that React was going to be the next big thing. And so we did a lot of work in the open source community with React and helping some larger clients with React work that were also sort of early adopters. And we sort of just, you know, rode that wave. And then React Native came onto the scene, and it's been a great choice for a lot of companies, allowing us to help people build cross-platform mobile apps, which is a pretty big deal. I mean, that's sort of the selling point of React Native is like, you can have one engineering team building for both iOS and Android. It's React. There's differences between web and mobile, but a lot of your React engineers that are doing web work can also kind of get cross-trained onto mobile development as well. So those are kind of the reason why, you know, we've been big on React and React Native is that's sort of the thing we've been using. And also just our, you know, React's got a big community. There's a lot of client work to be done. A lot of larger companies are choosing React. They have been for quite a while. React sort of held the throne, it seems like, for quite a while now. So, you know, we're going where the market goes. We also like React quite a bit. It's a pretty nice framework and makes our lives quite a bit easier. But in later years, you know, TypeScript has been pretty big. So now we kind of consider ourselves a TypeScript shop as well in terms of programming languages. We do a lot of work with TypeScript, help clients migrate to TypeScript, which has been great. And we also have engineers doing Rust and Golang as well. So we do some more additional languages. It's not the bulk of our work. A lot of our backend work is still Node. We do a lot in the GraphQL space. This is another space we've been pretty big in, and early adopters is GraphQL. And so a lot of our like backend GraphQL type work is often in Node. Node.js seems to have, I think, probably the most mature like GraphQL ecosystem, and that's fit well with like our expertise. So definitely, yeah, big JavaScript company, but we also do, you know, Rust has been getting a lot of attention, which has been cool. And so we've been dabbling in Rust as well.
Well, I love the fact that you have all of these different viewpoints, you're touching all these different frameworks, because it really does show that you're able to provide a wealth of expertise to the clients that you are working with. And that's fabulous. And of course, I love the fact that Cloudinary is an arrow in your overall quiver too, that you can bring that into all the discussions, which kind of brings us to your project. So as we know, we mentioned that you have Formidable, which is a overall agency working with clients on all sorts of design and development efforts. But then you also have your main brand presence, so formidable.com. Talk to me about what your decision-making was with the website and why you decided to maybe go in a different route when it came to the ways that you were working with images for that site versus what you're doing today.
Yeah, so a number of years ago, we had migrated our formidable.com, like our agency website, to a stack of, we were using React Static, which was like, you know, now kind of considered an older framework, but it was a way for us to generate static web pages, which is great for an agency site like ours that doesn't have a ton of dynamic content. You know, we'll change things like every week, every other week, but that's like a pretty low frequency, you know, for changes. And so we were working with a stack of React Static. We were using Netlify CMS for allowing our like marketing team to author content in a GUI, a visual interface. And then when they would make those changes, basically what would happen is it would kind of commit those changes right into our Git repository. So our entire website was totally Git driven at the end of the day. And so this was pretty nice for us, you know, in terms of like the development teams we have, you know, that's a pretty natural flow for us. But when everything is static and it's just like a straight up React site and everything is sort of handled locally through the Git repository, images sort of become kind of a sticking point, because carrying around a ton of images, like all the images you need for like blog posts or case studies or whatever other kind of content you have on your site. And like, we don't even really have user generated images, and we still had a pretty hefty load of images. So, and it was kind of a burden to try to have, say, like our content authors or whoever's generating images be very like in tune with like, how many megabytes is your image? What format is your image? And like, that's a lot to ask of a content author to be like super, you know, concerned with like the nitty gritties of their images that they're uploading. So we've been migrating our site to try to, React Static has been at end of life for more than a year now. So we were in the process of migrating off of that. Netlify CMS has been great. Also sort of slowing down in this development. And we were looking towards something, we're moving towards Sanity, which is another CMS that has been great for us and allows us to provide content. So we've been talking about migration. Images were sort of like the biggest baggage in terms of like our existing flow and sort of the lowest hanging fruit to some degree. It was sort of like the most bang for buck in terms of our migration, which is great, especially because most websites are very image heavy. I think images make up, we could probably Google the statistic, but the majority of like web bandwidth is just images. And so, you know, optimizing images is a great, great first thing to do in terms of, you know, saving bandwidth, improving speed, things like that.
So was there an actual problem, or what was the actual problem that led you to look for an alternative in the way that your images were handled? Were you experiencing, you know, any downsides to the way you were doing it before? And how did you know, okay, Cloudinary is our solution?
Yeah. So when you have like 1200 or 1500 images checked into your Git repository, like pulling the repo down, like cloning the repo, moving things around, it gets pretty heavy. It gets kind of chunky. You end up with just like gigabytes of images that are in there. And we had a workflow for basically using Sharp, which is a node library, a very high performance, like image transformation processing library. And so we kind of knew that we wanted to deliver sort of next gen images. And so we had a process for like turning our original image assets into WebP versions, which WebP is like a, you know, next gen image format. Although now I'm wondering if it's still considered next gen or not. There's some other players in the space, but we could probably loop back around to that. But we had a process for like taking just a straight up JPEG, turning it into a WebP, and it would get committed right back into our repository so that, because we were serving those images out. So we were now, if you had 1500 source images, we really had 3000 because we were creating these WebP versions. that weren't being resized or compressed at all. They were like literally just converting the format of them. So we had sort of a workflow for trying to reduce some image bandwidth on the site by serving WebPs where there's browser support for that's pretty good. But we were running into this thing where our repo had a lot of baggage, and managing our images and getting everything to like process our original assets into WebP, it was just a very clunky workflow. And when we were looking towards like, I don't know, resizing images or using something like AVIF, like more like efficient image formats, it was going to be daunting. It was going to be like the multiplicative effect of now you're going to need, for every source image, you're going to need 4 generated images stashed in there. So, you know, we were looking at just like totally bogging down our Git repository. Also just kind of like realistically wasting engineering hours trying to create our own subpar version of image processing and delivery, which is just, you know, we try to avoid that at Formidable. We often advise our clients to pick the solution that requires the least amount of like, you know, dev effort, which is generally like kind of good advice unless you're in like a very specific edge case. And so we figured, you know, it was time for us to take our own advice. We would probably never tell our own client to like check all of their images into Git. You know, we would be pushing them towards image hosting solutions. And so it was just a matter of time for us to get caught up on our own site.
When I think it's smart what you did, because it's something that we hear continually when we start talking about headless architecture and composable architecture. A lot of the conversations around choosing what they call best of breed, right? Which is where there's lots of vendors that do something correctly. Don't try to replicate the wheel. Don't try to do something that somebody already is spending in thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of R&D hours in to understand. So as you said, serving everything as a WebP, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, WebP is ultimately something that's meant to supersede JPEG, PNG, et cetera. But in the same sense, now you're able to deliver things as AVIFs or JPEG XLs or whatever you want to be able to use. So it allows for people to be able to say, we got the format situation for you. It's okay. You don't have to set all the engineering hours on it. So I like the approach that you ultimately took with this effort to know that when do we want to really make that investment versus when do we want to go with someone that's already made that investment for us? So that very good choice on your part. What I would love to talk about, Grant, so as you can see here, we have a whole blog post that is written on the Formidable site, which we also have linked here in the show notes. And it's going to outline a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about here today. But what I would love for us to be able to do is take a look at some of the code, some of the details that you have here, but really breaks down this particular sentence right here. The fact that you were able to do some things where you were able to reduce that image bandwidth by 86% across 30 of your most front-facing web pages. So I'm going to pop over your screen here and we can start walking through some of the stuff that you're able to do at Formidable to make this possible.
Cool. Yeah, I think we could step through this blog post a little bit. I also have these code snippets from the blog post pulled out into a GitHub gist, which I will probably jump over to because it's a little easier to read here and we have line numbers. But just wanted to talk first about like big picture idea of like, okay, we want to migrate to Cloudinary. What was our mental model for like executing a migration of all of our images on our site? So this little image here sort of sums this up, where we kind of took a 4-step approach of, and that might be a little small, but the first step was upload our entire image library from our Git repository up to Cloudinary. That's pretty low stakes. And honestly, I botched it a couple times in the process, but was able to like nuke my like folder in Cloudinary and then just do it again. And so, you know, there's a little bit of trial and error there, but uploading it first was like, you know, I could test it. I wasn't actually changing anything on the website. So that's sort of like no harm, no foul. So step one was just like taking the images from where we had them and getting them into Cloudinary in a way that allowed us to do our migration across the website and all of our content. So the second step was migrating the image URLs in our content. So once we have like the media library in Cloudinary's DAM, their digital asset, M is for what?
Management.
Okay. DAM library, whatever we're calling the thing. Once it's up there, we need a way to like, all of our content was in markdown files. We had a very like markdown driven site. We needed to go into all those markdown files and change all of the image paths from like relative paths, because everything was in the same like repository served out of the same bucket. We were using relative image paths for all of our image tags. And we needed to update those to be like fully qualified URLs pointing to Cloudinary and have it, you know, point to the right image. So this was sort of the hard part, was like getting that migration and automating that out so we didn't have to do a bunch of manual work. So writing the migration script for that.
So talk and to then, me about that, because I agree with what you said. That sounds challenging. So what were some of the steps that you remember having to take when you were talking about that migration script to make sure that everything was going from the relative to the situation you have now?
Yeah, I mean, we could probably jump into some code if you'd like. That might be the easiest way. Maybe the easiest way to do this is just jump right into some code. Do you want to start there, or do we want to start with uploading the library to Cloudinary?
Actually, yeah. If you want to take a step back and talk about the uploading part, that'd be awesome. And then we can jump back and talk about testing once we go through the first two steps. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. And honestly, the uploading to Cloudinary was probably the easiest part, I think. I mean, Cloudinary offers a lot of SDKs and even like REST APIs that are very easy to use. And so JavaScript, I mentioned we do a lot of JavaScript at Formidable. So yeah, we just wrote a JavaScript, as they call them, to migrate our images up. So as you can see in this code snippet here, we are using the Cloudinary Node SDK, which is pretty great. That, you know, it made life very easy. So we have a lot of like configuration. We had some baggage from our site where like over the years we had changed how things were structured. And so the places where our images lived had kind of changed over time. But there are some like weird edge cases that I'll point out here, but I don't want us to get bogged down too much in those details. So we configured our Cloudinary SDK. I omitted like our cloud name, API key, API secret. I also only ever ran those as a process arg. So you had to pass those into like a CLI command so that I never accidentally commit those into Git. Even though our Git repository is private, but you know, good practice not to commit your API secret into your repository. So configuring that, this just got passed in through a command line argument. That sets up the Cloudinary SDK. And then I just have this main function, which runs when I call the script. So I have, you know, this is kind of the bulk of things, but this is just a JavaScript file. I'm gonna scroll way down. At the bottom, I'm just running this main command. And so this is pretty common practice if you're writing a Node script. You just write a function, call it at the end, and you know, log out an error if something bad happened. So this main function is sort of the bulk of stuff. So one of the things that I've been bitten in the past is if you have like a long running script that's doing an operation over and over again, if something fails halfway through or like a process gets corrupted and like your thing stops, it's good to like save your work as you go. So you know what's been uploaded and what hasn't been uploaded. So if you're uploading 1500 images, like keep track of the ones that have been successfully uploaded. So you don't have to redo those in case like something falls over or fails. So, you know, learn those from field combat of like not doing that in the past. So this is just like a status map where I just like literally had a JSON file that I would write to.
Okay.
So as images were being processed, you just like create a record in a JSON file. And it's just like the image name and then like whether or not it succeeded or not. And then when you start the script up, we use that to check like which ones are already uploaded and which ones aren't. So not super important, but a fun little call out of like, if you're doing a long running process, probably good to track your progress as you go in case you have to restart that thing.
Smart.
Totally.
So this looks pretty ugly. It's not super, super pretty code, but what I wanted to do was grab all the source images from our repository. And we, like I said, we had images living in different folders. And so I have this configured in like a configuration file, but this asset roots is like just an array of like paths to the folders where images lived. So using this library glob, which is a super cool library, I find myself using glob all the time. Yeah, there's a lot of libraries in the space for globbing stuff, but basically allows you to point to a folder and then just write like a glob statement like this, where it says, hey, go ahead and like search through everything nested under there and find me all of the files with these extensions. So this is a pretty easy way to like go find all those images. So PNGs, JPEGs, SVGs, GIFs, the whole kit and caboodle there.
This is, and it definitely comprises everything that you would have had there prior to moving to Cloud Neuro. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then once I have found all those from the folders, just flatten that out into a flat array. And then there's some extra stuff here of like, this was just like cleaning up some stuff. We wanted to filter out the WebP generated files, which had a specific like prefix on them. Also clean up the path a little bit, just removing like the prefix. So it doesn't have like user, Grant Sander, home, GitHub, whatever, like just removing the stuff from the beginning. And then this is the part where like checking against the status map where it's like, okay, if it's already been uploaded, don't do it again. So we're only doing this on the images that are marked as needs upload. So we have all of our image files that we want to upload. That's, you know, not too bad. And then what I'm doing is I'm going to skip a couple of things that aren't super important. What I did was ended up like batching the upload. Cloud Neuro does have some rate limiting in place. And so I tried to like upload 50 images at a time. And like I hit some rate limiting issues and I was like, okay, let's just, I have time. I can run this and go eat dinner. So I just batched it at size 2, but you can kind of control that. And so what I'm doing is uploading 2 images at a time. So this is like, there's some logic here for doing like batching up some stuff. But at the end of the day, to upload an image, it's like literally just Cloud Neuro uploader. And then there's an upload method and you just pass in the path of the thing. And that's pretty darn simple. So like there's some complex stuff here, but it's only because of the complexity of like the repo that I was working in and like finding the images. But to upload like a single image, you just pass it a file path and give it a public ID. One of the things we had to look out for was I had to take the path of an image and give it like, I had to follow some logic to give it a public ID, which is how you're going to like specify which image to like load, right? The key identifier. I had to make things deterministic. And so there's some cases where we had some stuff where I had to like rename a couple files because like we had a gen.jpg and gen.svg, like it's the same file name, different extension. And that was causing some conflicts when I was generating public IDs. So I had to do a little bit of cleanup around that, but generating out like a deterministic public ID based on the image path. And we'll use that. You'll see that again on the next step of like migrating things. I also had a folder. All these got uploaded into the same folder in Cloud Neuro. Super easy just to specify that. And then I set the overwrite to true. Just in case it was already there, I can just re-upload it.
When I was looking at that little portion of it right there, line 70 about to 80 or 82, that was smart, the overwrite situation. Because you don't want any of your batch processing to get hung up because it's saying you can't overwrite an existing file in case of what you talked about, where we do want to overwrite a file that's been like sampled at JPEG. Okay, we do need to overwrite that from what's there. So that was smart to make sure the batch continued and was processed completely.
Yeah, and then status map. Once the image uploads, you set the thing on the status map. And then I just, again, this is sort of like, not super scientific, but it works good enough. Every 10 iterations, I'm just writing out this JSON file. So it's kind of like hitting Command S every time you upload 10 batches. So. Yeah, again, like it's good enough to like save yourself some time in case something goes wrong in the middle of it.
Well, it sounds like we've all been burned somehow without hitting Command S at some point. So putting that logic into what you're doing here, it makes sense. So I like this a lot. And frankly, in my opinion, if we'd covered nothing else in this episode, obviously we're going to cover more, but if we're covering nothing else, be showing a clear migration path from something to Cloud Neuro, which you provided here, is amazingly useful for the million plus developers that are using Cloud Neuro. So this is fantastic information.
Yeah, even including overwrite true and everything we just talked about, like line 70 all the way through your check to periodically save your progress. Like anyone watching, you know, this is open source. You could probably take this or make a similar version of this. I totally agree. So if people only get this, it's probably valuable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Grant, so we've kind of covered the point of the migration efforts. Is there anything else? Well, not the migration efforts, but the uploading the library to the Cloud Neuro. Anything else that's important to mention about this process?
I think we covered most of it. The upload process, like Cloud Neuro SDK, makes it just very easy. I think the big part was like, make sure your public ID, like you've got to keep your eyes on the public ID because that's the thing that you're going to end up using. And so at some point you're going to end up using that public ID again. So making sure that like you have a, you know, having some logic for generating, like deterministically generating those so that when you go to migrate your content, you could give the proper public ID. But I think that's kind of like, I think the Sket cloud name is somewhere else in this gist. The details aren't really that interesting. It's kind of based on like whatever your own setup is. But I think the public ID is another one to keep your eyes on. But yeah, other than that, I think that kind of covers the gist of the upload process.
Yeah, and it is something that we push a lot in training, where when we are talking to customers, they think about naming conventions for their files or their assets. And public ID is how we do that. And I think your example was perfect, where gen.jpg versus gen.svg technically have the same public ID with the way that Cloudinary looks at it, because file extension is not considered as part of that. Unless we're talking about a widely different format, like if it's gen.mp4 versus gen.jpg, yeah, it might be seen as different situations. So it is important for even to people thinking about, how do I want my files to be named once they are migrated to Cloudinary? Do we want them to stay the same, same as local? Do we want some form of randomization to prevent overwriting? There's lots of ideas around that. So I think that was good for you to focus on.
Nice. Cool. So then,
migration, right? So that's part step two of the four-step process?
Yeah, let's talk migration. Which I will go ahead and find that file. Let's see.
Yeah, Grant, while you find that, I just wanted to air your tweet, which really made me laugh, where you said, Cloudinary is boss. When you tweeted about this blog, I really got a kick out of that. And I know that probably, as you said, the upload part is relatively simple and straightforward. And I'm looking forward to getting to the code where we talk about optimizations and where what probably led you to saying Cloudinary is boss.
Yeah, that sounds great. We'll churn through this, the migration part here to get into some more interesting stuff. So again, a lot of this is sort of like has details around like the specifics of how our repository was structured. We'll just touch on some of the like higher points, some high level points. So again, we're going to do some globbing here, which is great.
Great.
So a similar thing here of like, grabbing all of our markdown files. So you can see here, we're going in and we're saying, hey, inside of the content folder, this is where all of our content files live. Give me all the markdown files. So now we've got all the files we want to inspect. And this is the primary place where we want to update URLs. So like just looping through the files. So four const of files, just loop through one at a time and doing a node file system read file and just reading out that file. So this is like taking a markdown file, just loading it into memory. UTF-8 encoding. And so we can kind of look at that and work on it like it's a string. So at this point, file contents is like literally just a string, which is like the markdown content that's in there. Which is kind of nice because if you have a string, you can do whatever sort of shenanigans you like string shenanigans you want. So I am a sucker for a good regular expression. And so we have kind of a nasty one here. I think maybe all regular expressions look a little bit nasty, but
I agree. I definitely agree with that too.
So this is like, we won't go too far into this, but you can kind of pick out a couple things here where we're looking for things that end with PNG, JPEG, SVG, GIF, WebP. And they also start with, I mentioned the asset roots before, which is like the folders in which images would live in. So it's kind of like going and say, okay, if we see any like things that start with a forward slash and they have the asset folder name to start and then they end in like a .jpg, that's going to be a thing that's referencing is like a relative URL to an image that's hosted in our repository. So we can use that R, this is not a great name, but I'm scripting. And so I'll give myself a little bit of grace here. Using that regular expression. And with a regular expression, you can pass it into the string replace method. And you can actually kind of do logic on these things. So this gives us the match itself. And, you know, there's a lot of like regular expression stuff going on here. But what we're doing is basically generating the Cloudinary ID. This is what the CID is. And it's using the get cloud name that we saw before. And this is like the thing that like took a file path and turned it into like a deterministically turned it into an ID for Cloudinary to use. And here we are using it again, because now we're looking at the file path and we're going to say, all right, we need that file All right, we need that Cloudinary ID to use as part of this URL. So Cloudinary has their own URL structure for like requesting images. So we have, we're going to use our project ID, image upload. I sent a version number on these, which we could get into some details on there, passing in a folder and then using the Cloudinary ID. So this is how we kind of like, you walk through each markdown file, you use that same function that generated the ID, and you just use that as the like last part of this Cloudinary URL. And then you just do a little swaparoo. You just swap that relative path for a Cloudinary URL. And you write that thing right back into the markdown file that it came from.
Go ahead, Sam.
Go ahead. You got a great question.
I was just going to say, in line 42, is that an exhaustive list of file extensions that it could be, or do you have a fallback in case there is, something hanging out in there that isn't on that list?
Yeah, for our case, this was exhaustive. We didn't have anything outside of PNGs, JPEGs, SVGs, GIFs, WebPs. Theoretically, it's not exhaustive. There's other image formats that could have been in there. And so for our case, it was good enough. But like you would probably, like if you were using, what are some other image formats?
TIFF files or TIFF files.
AVIF. Yeah, some other images. You might also want to include those in there, but we had, kind of just the vanilla image format. So it was cool. A little easier for us. But yeah, you would want to update this to cover all of your image extensions.
And I guess you wrote the logic anyway, that if something were to break, it would stop and have saved that batch. So
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. And the next script is actually like validating that images didn't break. And so I had like a little bit of a fallback in case, we had an oopsie.
Yeah. Cool.
Couple and things then what I'm asking about here, and I think you're highlighting it. So if you're saying the same thing, you're great. But yeah. So talk to me about your decision to add F-Auto and Q-Auto to this overall process. Because obviously I know what F-Auto Q-Auto is. Jen knows. But talk to me about your decision-making on what and why you decided to add those transformations.
Yeah. So with Cloudinary's like image URL transformation syntax, you can pass in these transformation parameters that transform the image. If you left out this part here, we deleted this part out, Cloudinary is just going to serve you back the original image asset. And, that's okay. But we mentioned earlier that like a lot of times serving up an original image is not the most optimized. It's almost never the most optimized solution. Right. So Cloudinary, and this is one of the things that I think makes Cloudinary so powerful and makes this sort of thing low-hanging fruit is this F-auto parameter is auto format, which says, hey, like your browser requests the image. Cloudinary looks at information about the requesting browser, says, what's the best image format to use for this browser? So if it's Chrome, it's probably going to be like an AVIF. If you're like, for some reason, on Internet Explorer 11 or something like that, it's going to choose something else that's not a next gen because you're using a 20-year-old, 10-year-old browser. And it just serves the best one. And this is like, you don't have to think about it. Cloudinary's, magic just serves the best format for you. But that's nice because now you don't have to specify and you don't even really have to care too much about the original image extension. You just say, hey, Cloudinary, give me the best one, whatever, we trust you to give us the best one. And then Q-Auto.
To double down on that real fast, like when we were talking earlier about your original format situation where you're converting everything from JPEGs to WebPs, I think your Internet Explorer one is perfect because, as we know, Internet Explorer and WebP don't really get along because of WebP was becoming more of a format as Internet Explorer was starting to get phased out and Edge was becoming a thing for Microsoft. So it does help for those backward looks as well as those forward looks. So I think it was really, really smart to make sure that you're looking at it from that sense. And yes, you're looking at exactly what I was just going to recommend is caniuse.com. This is always a great way to see the latest and greatest from what types of browsers can serve certain formats. And as you can see here, like older versions of Chrome, older versions of Firefox, they can't handle AVIFs. If we pull up WebP, it would be almost identical in some of those cases too. So it's nice that you have something that can constantly format to every user's various browser choices, because probably there are still some IE users out there that are using IE6, in my opinion, which is crazy, but it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And even, I think even, AVIF as an example has pretty good support, but Edge doesn't support it. which is kind of interesting to me. I would have thought they would, but you know, I believe Edge does support WebP, and so and it has for quite a while, actually, since very early on. So the nice thing there is like, okay, AVIF is great. It's probably better than WebP in a lot of scenarios. It's going to use that most of the time. But like Edge users, we can't forget about them. Edge is a good browser. So let's serve them WebP, which is pretty good. And then, you know, fall back to something else if you're, for some reason, running IE 11.
Yeah. And if you are, I strongly suggest not. Like, go ahead with your browser. But you know, like I said, all strokes for all different types of people. So it all makes sense. So it's sorry to jump out of the F-Auto, Q-Auto situation, but I love the choices there. But what about Q-Auto?
Yeah, so F-Auto serves you the best format, so like image format, which is great alone for bandwidth because a lot of these next-gen formats have better compression ratios, and so you can send smaller images, which is really good. But the Q-Auto is auto quality, which allows, basically, it allows Cloudinary to choose the right compression. And so like if you take an original JPEG, you can say, all right, let's save this as 70% quality so we can shrink this file size quite a bit. So there's always kind of like a balance between file size and image fidelity. That's sort of like the trade-off here is like, okay, full quality, you have the highest level of fidelity, but you have the largest file possible. And so like kind of moving the needle on that lever a little bit, it's kind of like a balance of like, what's the best thing to serve here? The Q-Auto kind of just allows, again, Cloudinary's magic to pick where to put that needle for you. You don't have to do it. It's just like, what's the best ratio of like fidelity to compression ratio here and file size. And so again, this is like an easy way just to use the, you know, the thing that Cloudinary does really well is like doing that for you. And just like not burdening our content authors with making that choice. Like they don't have to worry about it. It's just going to be a good one. Fidelity is going to be good enough. It's going to reduce image bandwidth as much as you can without like making images look super distorted. So I kind of see F-Auto and Q-Auto as kind of going hand in hand in a lot of ways of just like a good default for like not really thinking a whole lot about image stuff. Like to a large degree, you can just kind of forget about the nitty gritty of like the image delivery and format and stuff and just be like, yo, I want a really cool image of this thing. And then Cloudinary handles like serving it well.
Oh my gosh. You said it in almost the words that I always say when I talk to people about F.Q, and I always talk about it in terms of set it and forget it. Like it's where it's like, just let it do its magic and handle it, because you're always going to make sure that you're getting a 200 when you're serving something, right? You're always getting it where the image is going to come through. You're not going to be like, as you were pointing out, like if I tried to serve an AVIF today to a Edge user, I could potentially get a 404 or not be able to display content, some type of something that we don't want. This guarantees deliverability. It delivers it at the right bandwidth, the right compression, the right format every time. So yeah, set it, forget it, the way you put it, just set it and leave it, whatever people want. But it works nicely in the case.
And one I have to say, I was going to say line 31 is why I would venture to say Grant tweeted Cloudinary is boss, because F-Auto Q-Auto will it till the cows come home. That is Cloudinary's special sauce, our magic. And I'm glad that we all agree. And if anyone's just listening and not watching, they wouldn't see the big, huge smiles on my face and Sam's face as Grant was saying all of that before, because it's like Sam said, that's basically like a script that we say in training is everything Grant said. So you really couldn't have said it, Grant.
And we didn't coach ahead of time, Grant. So
yeah, seriously. No coaching.
But one thing I want to ask you about, because this is interesting to me. So line 32, where you're declaring the version number here, what was your decision making there? Because I can see it's a very specific version number. What was your choicing there? Because that's something that I haven't seen a lot in people's code. And it doesn't mean it's wrong. I'm just interested in what you're doing there.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to make a strong argument that you should do that. Honestly, I think it was partly coincidental from grabbing one of the images that I uploaded. I'm guessing that's where that version number came from, was like the first image I uploaded and grabbed the URL for.
Oh.
There's also another reason that I left that in there was because for regular expression reasons, the fact that you can have folders, like you can have kind of like a nested folder structure of your Cloudinary ID, and you can kind of nest things with slashes, it can be a little hard to figure out where your like parameters start, like your Cloudinary parameters. So like after upload, you add in your Cloudinary parameters.
Yeah.
And then you can add your version number in there and then put in your like folder and path to the image. Without a very specific like V with a bunch of numbers, it can be kind of hard to figure out from like a regular expression standpoint where to inject in the parameters. And so like I set up some automation to like take any Cloudinary URL and check to see if it had S auto and Q auto. And if it didn't, it would automatically inject it in there. So if people were like picking a Cloudinary URL, it would just be like, we had a GitHub action script set up and it would automatically add it in there. And it was kind of hard to do some of the automation without the version number there. I may have been able to do it, but I like
wow,
it.
Yeah,
it makes sense. It makes sense.
That's the first time that I've ever heard of someone using a version number sort of as like a pipe or a place to look for. So like in your code, did you have it look for /V or something? Or, you know, how did you have
it? So like, I guess I don't have the code pulled open right now, but if we open the console, like if you were to do something like, you look for something like V and then you could do like digit, multiple digits. And then you could test like something like this. I don't know if you can see it. Let me blow that up.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that doesn't pass, but if you have something like V123, it'll pass that. So it was just kind of a way to do like regular expression stuff to like figure out where things go. And there, again, I'm not fully sold that there's no way to do this without the version number. It was just the path of least resistance for me. A lot of these older images, we didn't need to do a ton of like versioning on them. Mm-hmm. And so at some point, leaving the version number out is kind of nice because then, you know, Cloudinary just uses the most up-to-date one. And so, yeah, I would have to think more about like, I'm not 100% convinced I would advise people to leave the version number in there. It was just something I did out of like the migration process, making life a little easier.
And the way I look at it, Grant, is this is once again showing a real world scenario, and it worked perfectly for you. So it is to say, if someone ever had issues when they were trying to migrate things over and be using regular expressions or regex, then this is a reasonable outcome, in my opinion. So this is good. So now that I've seen this, so I feel like we've accomplished two steps now, but the third step, and we didn't dive into it deeply because, of course, I backtracked us and like, let's talk about code. But in the same sense, the third step was testing this migration. How did this work? So talk to me about the overall testing process.
Yeah, we're going to run out of time at some point. So we'll go through this one pretty quick because I think the fourth step is maybe a little more interesting. But the migration validation was pretty cool. So it was like, I wanted to make sure I didn't totally botch things, which is good. It's good to validate. You know, it's kind of like writing a test for your migration, which is nice. And what I did was basically built our static site, which then dumps the entire built site out into it's a public folder is the name of the folder, but it's basically just like building your static site. And it's just dumping out all the HTML files for your static site.
Yeah.
So what I did was, again, I did some globbing and grabbed all of the HTML files out of the built site. And another status math, because this was a process that took a little while, so saving my progress as I go. But what I did was loop through each HTML file from the build output. And I use this thing called, Broken Link Checker is the actual name of this library. And Broken Link Checker has, I have it pulled open here. It does a handful of things. It basically allows you to find broken links, missing images, et cetera.
Right, and
you know, like, well, that's what I need to do. I need to make sure I don't have any missing images in here. So what I did was, I used this library. I just read each HTML file from the build output and just configured this HTML checker thing to look for images. And if an image was missing, it just pushed it onto an array. I wrote that thing out into a JSON file. And then I could just go look and say, hey, are there any images missing? And if there were, it would tell me what the actual source was. And so it was really easy for me to just do a like global find in the repository to say, all right, here's where we missed the thing. Like, what happened here? This was actually pretty nice because I did miss a couple images because in the migration, I only migrated in the markdown files. but we had some JavaScript files where like our React code lived, where we had like images, like a header image or a footer image that was not in our content. It was like part of our actual code, like the JavaScript code. And so this was actually kind of nice. It actually caught a handful of pretty important images that were like not content specific, but more like header and footer images. So this was an easy way just to go in and check to make sure, you know, we didn't miss anything.
Yeah, excellent. I like the no all good, no boy way to put captures there. Fantastic work there too. So, okay. So I understand the testing process. And honestly, once again, this is really good playbook material for anybody that's going through migrations when we're going through this overall process. But then we're now to the final step, the big one, right? Which is where everything is live and we're able to start going through and seeing results of this overall process. So talk to me about that.
Yeah. So at this point, we've got all our content migrated. We've got our image library up in the cloud. We're ready to go. We're ready to merge the thing and ship it live. One of the things I did before that was just do a quick check. Like I knew we were going to be saving bandwidth. Like it's pretty obvious. That's a strong word, but it was somewhat obvious that, you know, that was going to be the case. I didn't have any doubt. I wanted to figure out like, okay, how much actual savings are we going to get? Because I did a spot check of a couple pages and I was just like, this seems like quite a bit. Were we really that image heavy? Were we really over serving that much? So what I did was wrote a script. Let me go find this to basically automate. The way I checked it was I would open a web page, open my Chrome dev tools. And so like, let's go to formidable.com, open my dev tools and go to the network panel. That's really big. Let me refresh this. You can select the image tab and it just shows you all of the images that load on this page. Mm-hmm. So pretty standard, you know, dev console stuff, but it also shows you like how many bytes are being sent to this page of just images. Cause I have the image filter on, but you can do the same thing for like JavaScript or CSS images. So what I did was just did a quick spot check on like our home page, a couple other important pages we had up for the time. And I just did a little bit of like, you know, napkin math and computed, you know, we were having savings around 75 to 80%, which I was like, well, maybe I should just check a bunch of pages, but I didn't want to do it manually. And I wanted to be able to tweak some things and make sure things were right. What I did was just write a script. And again, I got to go find this. Wrote a little script to basically automate that exact thing that I did using a tool called Puppeteer. So Puppeteer, just for those who don't know, Puppeteer is a pretty cool tool. I believe it's out of Google.
Yes.
And it's a node library which provides high-level API control to Chrome/Chromium over the DevTools protocol. So basically what it allows you to do is like create and automate like controlling a Google Chrome instance. It's basically what it is. So you can like spin it up, point it to web pages. It's almost like a little robot driving your little Chrome browser. And have a lot of APIs for doing different things. So you can do a lot of pretty cool stuff with Puppeteer.
And we love Puppeteer over here. It's interesting. You're not the first to mention this on even a Dev Jams episode, because we had it where people were taking screenshots of code and using that for Puppeteer purposes. We had a developer that was developing Open Graph images for his blog posts and doing that with some Puppeteer aspects. So fabulous tool. Can't recommend it enough for things like this. So once again, good work, Grant, using awesome tools. So yeah, good job there.
Yeah. Another interesting one that there's better tools in the space now, but for a long time, like generating PDFs was kind of a pain. And so I remember like early days of like using Puppeteer, you'd build a web page that was like 8.5 inches by 11 inches, point Puppeteer to it, do like a basically simulating a command P to like print the thing out and generating out like a PDF from the page. And it was like a really good way to use like web tooling. And like, it was like you were designing a PDF using all the web tools that you knew. And then you just use Puppeteer to automate generating those. So like dynamically generated like receipts or like inventory lists, things like this, you could use Puppeteer. So a lot of really cool use cases with Puppeteer.
For sure.
So with what we did here for measuring images, this was kind of tough. This was a tougher use of Puppeteer than what I've done in the past, but there's kind of some setup around, you know, getting Puppeteer up and running. But basically what we do is launch Puppeteer. I did headless false, which shows like the actual view. So you can see it like scrolling through pages and stuff, which is cool. I created a single page within the browser instance and just set like a viewport with The viewport size isn't really super important in this case, but there's a way for you to actually create a CDP session, which gives you kind of like access to like a DevTools instance. So this gives you a way to like programmatically access Chrome DevTools from the like robot run, you know, Puppeteer instance that you have.
Okay.
And then you can send signals. And this is, you know, I found a lot of this like from guides on the internet, things like that. But one of the things you do is like you enable the network functionalities of DevTools by sending it this network enable symbol. And then there's not a lot of code here, and you know, we're going to run out of time, so I don't want to go through all the details of everything. But one of the things that basically I did was you could tap into a couple events. And so network response received was an important one, or we listened for image responses. And so image or binary octet stream as the content type. And then you store those, because we also have another event. There's some like coordinating that we have to do here. I won't go all the way into the details of this, but when a loading finished, you see if it was one of those images that we caught earlier, and we go and say, okay, what's the image count? We'll just keep track of that. And then I'm not convinced this is the perfect way to do this, but a decent indicator of the image size is the encoded data length property. And this matches up pretty well with what Chrome gives you as well. But my impression is this might not be perfect, but it's pretty darn close. So it's like good enough for us to measure. It matched up from the pages that I spot checked. It matched up like perfectly with what I saw. So for me, it was good enough. I mean, it's a consistent measure across control and treatment groups. So my opinion, it was good enough. So then I basically just had, there's some math here. We don't need to look too much at the like dividing some stuff, but basically, you know, it's pretty standard comparison, like percentage stuff, but I have a control URL, which is like was at the time our production site, and then a staging URL where the new Cloudinary version lived. And so I have a control group and a treatment group. And for each URL that I wanted to test, I would point Puppeteer to the URL for the production one. And then for the staging one, measure all the stuff. I did a scroll to basically scroll down the entire page to like get the lazy loaded images to load. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, pretty common for images to load lazy. Wait for the network to idle so that you can capture all of the like loading finished events to make sure like all the images load in, and then just return back the like total, which was like the total number of like encoded bytes. And then I wrote all that into a JSON file, did the percent calculations, things like that. And the results, I know we've just got a few minutes, but the results were pretty amazing from like our homepage, for example, 27 images, percent saving was 48%. We had a lot of these that were like 86 to 90%. All of our like image heavy pages, like, you know, we have case studies that have these beautiful graphics. And these ones we saved a lot. A lot of these, the average across the 30 pages was about 80. It was a little over 86% bandwidth saving, which was quite a bit more than I was expecting. It was a surprising amount.
Amazing.
One thing that I wanted to ask you about, because now that we've seen the overall process, and it's great because, as I said a few times now, this is giving people a real world view of how they could actually accomplish a lot of these tasks with the tools that you've gotten shown. Of course, they may not have your expertise, and so they needed some help to be able to go down this path, but you've given it to them. But to wrap this all up, so as we have talked about at the very beginning of this conversation, Formidable is doing a lot of development and design work for clients, for large companies. You also said small startups, but people that need design and development help. With the learnings that you took through this project to help out the Formidable site, how are you now applying some of that to your client base?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is we're very eager to recommend services like Cloudinary early, like upfront in the development process, so that you can just avoid having to migrate at all, because migration comes at a cost. Like, you have to do the work. And so one of the things is just like, Here's an example of how much you can save by using a service like Cloudinary. Just use it up front. If you know that you're going to have a lot of images, user-generated images, a lot of content, visual heavy content, just start with Cloudinary up front. So I think that's sort of our recommendation to our clients now, is like you said, best of breed, choose the thing that's going to get the job done best. And this is a good showcase of that.
When I would also even say, like, I mean, I appreciate you recommending Cloudinary, but it's also, I think, even in strong message to that's not as about us, is just you really do need to think about your images and videos and how they're going to be displayed, how they're going to load. It's a very important part to how users experience these websites. So I think the fact that you're addressing Cloudinary at the beginning is also stating to them, you need to have a strategy when it comes to how you want your images and videos to be loading and how you want the user to receive those and be actionable with that information. So I love the fact that you're making your clients think about media more, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Jen, final thoughts here. What do you think? Is there anything that's burning in your brain here about what me and Grant and you have to cover here today?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is we've talked a lot about images today. And especially with client work, I was kind of already, my brain was already kind of going to, okay, what about other types of media? Like, you know, is Grant, are any of his clients asking about 3D or audio or video? We really focused on images today, but Grant, do you think this would kind of apply to everything?
Yeah, I think video is at least as complex as image is. And we have, for example, our Puma team has been doing some exploration with using Cloudinary's programmatic video generation and delivery. And so we've been doing some exploration on the video front where we have, you know, either like content author driven videos or even user generated videos and figuring out how to like programmatically handle those in an efficient way. So we have been looking. We haven't done a ton in the 3D space. The video is definitely something that's on our radar, especially with like video becoming pretty popular, you know, medium right now. You know, a lot of places are moving into the video space and allowing for user generated video stuff. And so definitely on our radar.
Absolutely. Yeah. Video and mobile and everything like that. And I actually find that Cloudinary is incredibly powerful when it comes to Q auto with video. I mean, the results are pretty mind-boggling, in my opinion.
Exciting. Well, Grant, thank you so much for being here. This was fantastic. We appreciate all of your time. We appreciate your insights. And obviously, you're doing some great work over at Formidable, as well as the entire Formidable team. So keep it up. This is fantastic work.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And so, of course, Jen, as we have pointed out right at the very beginning, but it's worth stating again for everybody here that all of these episodes, if you've enjoyed this one or want to see what else we've talked about, because we've mentioned with some of these technologies that Grant covered, we've covered them in other episodes as well. You can always visit all of those at cloudinary.com/podcasts and dive into all of the various episodes of podcasts that Cloudinary produces on that site. And of course, if you have other things that you want to discuss around what Grant has covered here, the best place to do that is the Cloudinary community. That's going to be at community.cloudinary.com. And you can see that we have forums for people that want to have more of a threaded conversation and ways to keep track of things a little bit easier. But also, we do have a Discord server for those that are Discord users and to have that as a real-time chat option as well for the overall community. So absolutely make sure that you guys are diving into all of that content. And as mentioned before, everything that we covered in this episode is also covered in depth in Grant's blog post, which is found on formidable.com, which we do recommend that you read for more deep details of everything that was in this overall episode. So Jen, before we let everybody go, any final thoughts before we say goodbye to our friends and family here at DevJams?
Well, lots of thoughts, and that was a really interesting episode for sure. But one of the main takeaways for me is how creative you can be with the givens. So for instance, just something like version number, it's not something, you know, all of our customers use or that would apply to every use case. And Grant was kind of using it in a unique way. And it just really goes to show you can be creative with what you're given. And I wonder if anyone watching might do something like that now after seeing what Grant did.
I agree. Absolutely. Amazing takeaway, Jen. So on behalf of everybody at Cloudinary, and of course, those that were involved with the overall program and its development, thank you for being part of this DevJams episode. And we are excited to see you at the future ones that we do produce. Take care, and we'll see you soon.